Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, this was the go-home show to this Sunday Survivor Series, and I have to tell you, as a go-home show, this really fizzled. This really, really fizzled. Now, we're going to get to the reasons why Survivor Series sort of feels like an afterthought in the eyes of the WWE. But let's first talk about exactly how they opened up Raw. Big E comes out, and he does his best, really, to promote the Survivor Series, saying this is about Roman Reigns, and he begins to set the table for Survivor Series, and Kevin Owens comes out. And Kevin Owens and him exchanging what, to be perfectly honest, was a pretty good back and forth, with Kevin Owens saying, look, I don't think I'm wrong. I think that what I did was perfectly justified. I think that what I did, any rational human being would do. If I'm the bad guy, you want to make me out the bad guy because you're popular and you're saying I'm the bad guy, they're going to go along with you. Fine, I'm the bad guy. Now, why I found this particularly good is because on the show we have said many times that the best way to promote a heel is when a heel actually has a point, but he's twisting it. In other words, the heel should never be right. The heel shouldn't be the righteous person who says, well, I have the facts on my side. The fact is, what Kevin Owens did last week certainly isn't justified by somebody not believing him. And the fact is that Kevin Owens certainly did nothing in that match the previous week to indicate he didn't realize that Seth Rollins had hit Big E. But in his twisted logic, we understand what he's saying. You should have believed me. You should have excused it. I should get the pass on this. Because I'm not, it's your fault. This is the perfect way you do build up a heel, where he believes he has an actual righteous motive for doing what he's doing, but the fans realize, no, he really doesn't. So I don't have a problem with this at all. What I do have a problem with is it seems like you're putting more promotion into that match than you are Big E and Roman Reigns. Now, you could argue what happens in a minute changes all that, but Big E basically chases after Kevin Owens and he's attacked by the Usos. Fair enough. But he's not fighting the Usos. He's fighting Roman Reigns on Sunday. But the Usos are saying this is a message from Roman Reigns. Down comes Matt Riddle. And the minute Matt Riddle came down, I realized this is going to be a tag team match. We see this very clearly. It's going to be a tag team match. And sure enough, Sonya Deville comes out. I'm a big Sonya Deville fan when it comes to her in-ring work. She's doing a terrible job. Just her both authority figures are doing a terrible job. And they really have no motivation for the way they're acting. And she says, I never do this, never do it, do it every week. But we're going to make a match. Okay, fine. So we have that match for, 5 minutes. And Seth Rollins ends up interrupting it. Therefore, Randy Orton comes down, and it turns into a six-man match now. Six-man tag team match. This was an okay opening, except for two things. One is you undermined the Survivor Series itself by saying, you know, putting all the attention on Kevin Owens and Big E. Two, isn't your tagline the one day a year? that Raw and SmackDown go head-to-head. Did I just not see Raw and SmackDown go head-to-head? Did I just not see the Usos against the RK-Bro? Did I just not see that? So there goes your tagline. Matt Riddle ends up getting pinned by Seth Rollins. And Randy Orton admonishes him backstage, saying, "This is why I told you you can't stick your nose in other people's business. And all I really care about are these titles and blah, blah, blah. We see this is coming to a head at some point." The problem I have with this, if this was just a normal opening to a normal show that was 3 or 4 weeks away from the Survivor Series, I'd say, okay. But this is the go-home show, Mike, and it seems like they're really not putting much emphasis at all on Survivor Series.
Right, right. And if you think about it, you compare this go-home show to the go-home show, and I know we can't do that. We're not supposed to do that, but to Dynamite. And people didn't like the go-home show of Rampage, but I thought it was a fairly decent go-home show, you know. And you compare them, and it's just it's blah, you know. It's Raw, SmackDown is blah, you know. I mean, it's your typical SmackDown show.
And not only is it typical, it's, again, it's almost like they're undermining it. They're saying, oh, well, we gave you a taste of RK-Bro and the Usos. Okay, fair enough. And, you know, the Usos were there to send a message to Roman Reigns. You know, okay, fair enough. But you haven't really built up a reason. I know Big E is saying after what you did to Kofi and what you did to Xavier, but even if I give him that, even if I say you've done an adequate job of building up that, these Survivor Series teams are a mess. They're an absolute mess. There's nobody to really root for. Remember the days when the Survivor Series teams used to be the heels against the faces? Now it's just Raw against SmackDown, and there's some heels and some faces, and how will they coexist? That's every angle. I just don't know. I just don't know. I mean, it was an okay opening, Todd, and it was a decent match. But Survivor Series really is beginning to feel like an afterthought to me.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about back in the day with the Survivor Series pay-per-views, throughout the years, like the mid to late 80s into the early 90s, you had the old format of the Survivor Series. Well, I remember back then you had the nothing but elimination matches. Now you just throw like singles matches and regular tag team matches in the mix. It's not the same and feel like they used to be.
No, it's not. Not as much fun either. Because if you're saying, well, this is about brand loyalty, most of the people that are on the Raw men's team were on SmackDown a month ago and vice versa. So how much brand loyalty could there possibly be? Anyway, Bianca Belair takes on Tamina. An okay match, but let me tell you my gripe with this match. During the match, there was a comment made that I thought was an okay comment, saying if there's one person that could probably outpower Bianca Belair, it's certainly Tamina. Bianca's used to being the strongest person in that ring, and I'm not particularly sure she is this time. That was good in selling Tamina, but nothing that happened in the match showed that. In other words, I would have wanted to see Bianca clearly show that Tamina is way more powerful and that she's going to have to go to a different form of her game to beat her because she's not going to beat her with power. Instead, she sort of outpowered her. And that's all that Tamina has. You can't take that away from Tamina because if you do, she doesn't have anything. So the right move was to have her try the power moves and Tamina pretty easily block them or get out of them to the point where the announcers are saying, well, she's clearly not going to outpower Tamina. There's nobody probably in this entire federation is going to outpower Tamina. And she's going to have to go to a different part of her game to do it. Then at least win. By all means, Bianca Belair has to win. But in doing so, she should at least sell that aspect of Tamina that, well, she's way more powerful than even Bianca, who's certainly more powerful than the rest. So in other words, you'd leave Tamina with at least the feeling of, well, she lost, but she clearly is the most powerful woman on SmackDown. We did not end that with this feeling, Mike, and it kind of left Tamina with nothing.
Right, it kind of left her with nothing. And frankly, it hurt the whole EST of WWE thing, because what's one of the ESTs? Is the fastest, right?
Yep.
That should have been how she won the match. Okay, you're not going to outpower Tamina, so what are you going to do? You're going to out quicker. You're going to outspeed her, you know, and outrun her, you know. And that's what should have happened in the match. We should have seen Tamina doing the power moves and Bianca Belair quickening the match up to the point of, well, Tamina's tiring out. Tamina's a little bit older. She's tiring out. You know, she's getting winded, having to chase Bianca around. And then by that time, then you can have Bianca hit her with the KOD, you know?
After right. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You have to leave Tamina with something. So if you were going to book the match anyway, it would have been great to book the match that, yeah, she came in there, Bianca Belair, thinking I'm still more powerful than Tamina. Within a minute or so of that match, after getting thrown around a little bit, you have to have her visibly show, uh-oh, I'm not, okay? She's obviously more powerful, so I'm going to have to go to something else. You have to have the announcers comment on that. Then at least when it's over and Bianca wins, Tamina's left with, well, okay, she lost, but man, she's even more powerful than Bianca. She's very powerful. That's at least the cookie you have to throw Tamina at the end of the match, Todd, to make her viable.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said about the Tamina and the Bianca Belair thing that last night or whatever happened. You know, like you said, Tamina Snuka, by the looks of it, every time she wrestles, looks like she's out of breath or winded anymore.
Yeah, but that, you could have played that up. You could have said, okay, well, yeah, she got tired quicker. She's a bigger person, and she got tired. You see, the idea is we're eventually going to see Doudrop against Bianca. And it would have been fascinating if we saw that Tamina Snuka clearly outpowered Bianca. So then you could say, well, what about Doudrop? She may be able to do the same thing. Plus, she's a little more athletic. So maybe Bianca's in bigger trouble than we think. No, if she's more powerful than Tamina Snuka, then she should be able to handle Doudrop. See, I think they handle the booking ass backwards as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, Becky Lynch comes out, cuts a half-face promo, because what's she going to do? She's facing Charlotte Flair, and everybody doesn't like Charlotte Flair. So she cuts a half-face promo, and a pretty good promo, in which she incorporates some of her real-life things, saying, we used to be best friends. And then my success somehow turned you into this bitter person that you are right now. And I don't understand it, because when you were successful, I was cheering you on. So that's a pretty good angle. But then the WWE realizes, well, wait a minute. We're promoting the Survivor Series, and we got to promote SmackDown. So send Liv Morgan out to make all this irrelevant. Now, I got to tell you, I've been in the Liv Morgan camp for a long time. I do think she's better than people give her credit for in the ring. But her mic work last night was terrible. Just terrible. And if she cannot improve on that, there is absolutely no way she's going to go forward in this business. I'm telling you, she's going to have to improve it. Number one, she sounds like a whiny brat. Number two, she sounds like she's reading it off the palm of her hand. There is nothing natural about her delivery. There is nothing natural about the way she acts. It's clearly someone doing an acting job. As opposed to Becky Lynch, who looks like she has. And when you put those two together, the only thing that came into my mind was there's a great scene in a movie called Under Siege with Steven Seagal, where Steven Seagal and Tommy Lee Jones have to exchange dialogue. And I said to myself, this reminds me of that, because Tommy Lee Jones is a great actor, and Steven Seagal clearly isn't. And when you had them isolated in the same movie and they didn't have to interact, you really didn't notice. But man, oh man, do you notice when they have to interact. Boy, do you notice when he delivers a line and then Seagal has to, and you're like, oh my God. Well, that's what it felt like last night. It felt like, okay, Becky's delivering some lines, very good. It's Liv Morgan's turn. Oh, Jesus. I'm not sure this is working for Liv Morgan. I don't even know what her character's supposed to be honest, if she has any. She has a sort of a little bit of a heelish feel to her sometimes, but not really. I don't know what the whole thing's supposed to be. But even the man slam turned into that flip looked kind of weak. And I'm just not buying this. I'm sorry. I know there's a lot of fans on the internet saying, oh, this is, I can't wait. Liv Morgan, yeah, you know, we're waiting for her. She belongs at the top. It's her turn to be champion and all this. No, it is not. She is nowhere near ready. Nowhere near ready to be a woman's champion. Unless you just want to give it to everybody because you want an inclusion trophy. See, you're supposed to give it to people who really do have that ability to put on a really, really solid match and sell their own matches with the mic. Liv Morgan can do half of one of those. She can put on a decent match. She can't sell her own fight on the mic. She just can't. They had a built-in angle with her. And they had a way to really, really, really solidify Becky Lynch as a heel, and they blew it. Liv Morgan said, it was Becky Lynch who told me, when I come back here, you're going to be the champion. And that meant a lot to me. All she had to do was get in that ring like a face and say, I know you come back here with a slightly different attitude, and I know that you're off and you're doing your own thing. But those words meant a lot to me. And I'm really honored that it's going to be me fighting you. And I can't wait for it. She doesn't have to act like Becky Lynch is a bitch and calling her a bitch. She should be thankful that Becky Lynch said that. Then Becky Lynch can be the one who says, I told you that because I felt sorry for you. I told you that because I thought really just the opposite. You're a waste of time here. Then that makes Becky Lynch the heel. The way this goes, oh, you said I'm going to be the champion, and I wasn't good enough to be the champion, so now I'm going to beat you because I couldn't accomplish what you said I could accomplish. It doesn't really make all that much sense, Mike, and I don't see how it makes Becky Lynch a heel.
Yeah, and look, you're right about her gimmick. I mean, in NXT, when she went back down to NXT, they gave her this thing, and she was pulling it off relatively well. And it was a heel gimmick down in NXT. Now, a lot of times when they bring people back up or whatever, or bring people up, they muddle their gimmicks. They muddle them, you know. And that's what they've done with this whole thing with Liv Morgan. They muddled her gimmick.
That's what it feels like. It just doesn't feel natural. It's just not coming to her natural. And I don't think she's anywhere near ready. Anyway, the Street Profits. And Alpha Academy, really, really solid match. Really solid match. You know, Chad Gable has been so underrated since coming over to Raw. He's really put on some really, really solid matches. He keeps losing. He has won one match. But he's put on some really solid matches. And they're keeping Otis strong by not allowing him to be pinned, but certainly destroying Chad Gable's credibility. Certainly destroying it. Still a good match. I mean, it has zero ramifications toward Survivor Series, so whatever. We then get this weird thing where Zelina Vega and Carmella are going to take on Nikki A.S.H. and Carmella, and Zelina Vega and Carmella are going to take on Nikki A.S.H. and Rhea Ripley separately. And Zelina actually pins Nikki, which, man, Nikki's worth is going downhill quick. She's a former women's champion. Rhea Ripley wins her match, you'll notice. Now, I don't know whether they're going to have some falling out between her and Rhea Ripley, because afterwards, Rhea Ripley's trying to console Nikki A.S.H. saying, you know, okay, you're not in the Survivor Series, but don't worry, you didn't win this match, but you're still just as good as always. And Nikki's not really looking like she's buying it. So I don't know what's going on here, Mike, but I do sense that they're going to do something with Nikki A.S.H. soon, and it may be a heel turn.
It may be a heel turn, and it may be her returning to her other gimmick, her crazy girl, nuts, you know the original thing that she was doing, even back down in NXT.
Could be. I mean, at some point, they're going to have to do something, I think. The superhero gimmick was cool for a while, and I was digging it and stuff. But as soon as she loses and they're cycling her down, it doesn't work so well. That only works when she's pretty much on top. And it looks like they're cycling her down now, and that superhero gimmick is fast becoming junk. I mean, who would believe you're a superhero if you can't win? So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Next up was Kevin Owens and Finn Balor. Finn Balor coming up to Kevin Owens behind the scenes and basically saying, I'm glad I wasn't here last week. I'd have told you to your face you're a liar. Like Finn Balor has any room to talk. Finn Balor was a heel his whole entire run in NXT. We're supposed to forget about that, I guess. This was a really strong match, though. And this time, I think Kevin Owens was definitely trying harder than he was trying before, which makes me think that he may have an eye on staying in the WWE. They may have went to Kevin Owens and said, what is it that you would like to do? How do we make you a little bit happier here? And I think he might have said, I want to go ahead and do a heel thing, by which I think I have the motivation. I still think I should be a face, but I'm actually a heel. Because he seems to be throwing himself into this more. And they gave him a win over Finn Balor, who almost legitimately beat Roman Reigns, but if it wasn't for the fact that the ropes broke. So you don't do that to a guy who's got one foot out the door. Not normally you don't. Normally, if he's not signed a contract yet, he's cannon fodder. He's losing to everybody. And you're telling him, well, you want to start winning? Sign the contract. We're not building you up for another federation to use. He beat Finn Balor. That's a big victory. And he beat him clean. That is a big victory. So I have to think, Todd, that Kevin Owens may be eyeing staying in the WWE.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, last time when Kevin Owens did a heel thing, he did a pretty good job. Then he turned him face, and that face run was not working. Maybe this run as a heel works pretty. He works better as a heel than a face, actually.
Oh, there's no question he does, Mike. And this feels like a Kevin Owens angle. So I have to think he's had some input into this.
I think so too. And look, we all said that Finn Balor would be better as a heel and be better in a group, you know. Now, I don't know if you're gonna make him a strong heel, he should have won or whatever, but he needs to start winning something. If you're gonna try and make him a heel or make him a face, for either one of those to take with Finn Balor, you're gonna have to have him win some.
No question. I mean, Finn Balor has really not been came over here. They gave him that one big push toward the title, and then it's been cycling down ever since. So we'll have to see what happens. You know what's really funny, too? We have Nakamura going against Damian Priest, and aside from a little vignette showing Damian Priest's matches and stuff, there's been no Damian Priest in a couple of weeks. You haven't promoted him at all, and you haven't promoted this match against champions at all. Not at all, which is really, really weird. I don't know if he's hurt. I don't know if he's sick. Obviously, they think he's going to make Sunday, but he sure as hell hasn't been around for a while. Anyway, Almost and AJ Styles actually have a pretty funny segment backstage where they're talking about movies, and he's saying he feels like Iron Man because he can turn around and say, well, I got an Almost instead of I got a Hulk. And then the Dirty Dogs come back with a pretty good line saying it's really not like the Avengers. It's more like Twins, with almost being Arnold Schwarzenegger and AJ Styles being Danny DeVito. But they did the right thing in this match, which was they just let almost destroy both of the guys, really. And all AJ Styles did was get tagged in and do a phenomenal forearm, which he did really, really well, by the way. See how far across the ring he got? And here's the thing I like about AJ Styles. And I know everybody knows he's my favorite wrestler in the WWE right now. But here's why. AJ Styles could very easily do that phenomenal forearm and not really put that much into it. Just, you know, here I go. I fly through the air. I hold my arm out. He always makes it look like he's really knocking you the F out. Watch that again as he rears back in midair and really throws that arm, like, with some emphasis. And when he does that, what he's really doing is helping Dolph Ziggler, because then you can take a look at that and say, well, I mean, if you got hit with that, yeah, I guess that would be it. As opposed to, well, that didn't even look like it hurt. You know what I mean? So AJ Styles definitely understands his game. Definitely one of the best wrestlers there. And yes, they're using him sparingly. And yeah, I do think maybe he's not 100%, because, man, he did nothing in this match except that. But what he did do was perfect. And what they did with Almost was perfect, which literally was he beat them by himself. They've got big plans for him. There's no question about it. I don't know whether it's going to be going against Big E or he's going to turn on AJ. I don't know what it's going to be. But they've definitely got big plans for Almost, because they are really protecting him, Mike, like I haven't seen someone protected in a long time.
Right. And think about this. The originator of that move, what essentially is the five-arm, right?
Yep.
Was Terry Taylor. He did the same. He was about the same size, as maybe a little bit taller as AJ Styles. But he did this. He was a consummate pro when he did it, and he did the exact same thing. It looked like when Terry Taylor did that move, it looked like he was hitting people with it. It looked like he was knocking you the F out.
Right.
You know? And that's what he. He had a somewhat good run, whatever, after that. But AJ Styles has taken that move and made it his own, number one. He is the best. I mean, look, we've said it before. This is a guy, no matter what federation we're talking about, he's probably the best wrestler in the entire world, the best professional wrestler in the world. And he's 42. 43,
yep.
Something like that.
Yep.
You know, I mean, we've said, you look at him and his body, and you could probably squeeze another, if he's not hurt, 2 or 3 years out of him. We also said that the younger version of him right now is Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. We'll get to Seth Rollins in a minute. But I like AJ. I like what he's doing. And if they have Almost turn on him, I'm not sure which one's going to turn and be the face there.
Yeah, that's an interesting angle. Because if AJ turns, he's not winning. And even if AJ stays heel, he's not winning. AJ's not beating Almost. Which could be what they're leading up to, or maybe it's not. I don't know. But the thing that I think you were saying is that whatever federation he lands in, whatever style they wrestle, he's able to do that at the very, very top level. Not everybody can do that. You know, the people who come from New Japan and they hit a federation, they're like, I'm not used to this style. I can't do it. And they're not very good at it. And then there's people from the WWE who go over to Japan and they can't do it. Or there's people that go to AEW and they can't do it. Everybody has their own kind of style, the way they wrestle. Styles has done it in every federation he's been in. Every single federation he's been in, he's been top of the card. not that many people have done that. And now you see why, because in a match that really doesn't matter a ton, that no one would have faulted him at all for just mailing in a typical forearm, he makes it look like $1 million. And again, the thing that most people don't realize is it benefits. I know people say, how does it benefit Dolph Ziggler? He lost. Yeah. But Dolph Ziggler can at least, you watch that tape and you can say, well, I mean, if anybody got hit with that, that would take your head off. Now, if it was a half-assed one, Ziggler's got to be pinned over a half-assed one that people say, ah, look at that, didn't even hurt. You know what I mean? So that's AJ actually protecting Dolph Ziggler to a certain extent. So listen, we've said it before, I'll say it again. They got somebody really good in Styles because he doesn't even complain about the wins and losses. He just doesn't complain about, well, I'm not in the spotlight. And let's face it, he's kind of training almost and bringing almost along. And let's be honest, almost is not going to go that far. As soon as almost loses, this whole thing is over. As soon as he becomes not invincible, that's the only gimmick. A guy like AJ Styles can stay around forever. A guy like Almost is probably not going to. Very rare for somebody like Almost to stay around that long. He could complain about that and say, hey, this is my last couple years, man. I want to take a good run at the top. He's not. He doesn't care. He's doing what's best for the company. Anyway, we then get to backstage. One more time, we get an authority figure giving wrestlers bullshit. This time it's Rey Mysterio, who basically is putting a match with Bobby Lashley out of sheer spite. Now, is not the WWE, did they not tell us no more authority figures, no more heel authority figures? How long ago was it that they stood in a Raw ring and said, we hear you loud and clear, you don't want any more heel authority figures? The WWE has no more ideas. The only ideas they can possibly come up with is heel authority figures. It worked once. It's going to work again. It worked once because Vince McMahon himself was a genius at doing it. It has never worked since then. It didn't work in Impact. It didn't work all the times we were doing the stuff with Triple H. That didn't work. And Stephanie, that didn't work. And it's not working now. The only time it worked was Vince McMahon. Because he took a different approach to it. And that approach was, he kind of just singled out one guy. And instead of 6 straight weeks of oppressing that guy and oppressing that guy and oppressing that guy, it was 1 week, he got the best. Next week, he got his ass handed to him. Next week, he came back. He was like Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. You know, he sets the trap, it backfires, he's back the next 2 seconds later trying something else. That's why it worked, is because everyone knew Vince McMahon is going to try his best to undermine this guy, but at the end of the day, he's no match. He's no match for Stone Cold, he's no match for The Rock, he's no match for these guys that he's trying to undermine. That's not what the WWE is doing now. The WWE is like, no, the authority is more than a match. They are actually the main bad guys. And anybody else is second banana to them. It doesn't work because they don't get in the ring. That's why it doesn't work. You can't have the wrestlers deathly afraid of the authority, because it makes the wrestlers look feckless and weak and cowardly. Was Steve Austin ever afraid of Vince McMahon? No. Did Vince McMahon do horrible things to him? Yeah. And Steve Austin's like, okay, son of a bitch. Well, watch what happens to him next week. That's why it worked. Just having Naomi come out, oh, she said bad things to me again. It's not working. Just having Adam Pearce, for whatever reason, not like the Mysterios, and then they do stupid things like saying, well, Dominic, you can't be in the Survivor Series because you aren't a former champion, and everybody else is a former champion. And then removing a former champion, put a guy in that's not been a champion, in Austin Theory, makes no sense. That doesn't make any sense at all. So it's so random. And there's not going to be any retribution on them. So we're just stuck with this nonsense again, Mike, that the WWE told us was never coming back.
Right. And think about it. We're talking about where these authority figures that would work. I mean, think about it. What was, for a period of time, what was Brandi Rhodes?
Right.
You know? She was a heel authority figure, and that didn't work. You know? So it's not work. The only time I've seen it work, well, there are two times I've seen it work. When Eric Bischoff was running WCW at the height
right.
of the NWO thing, when he was in the NWO, it worked because he eventually got his. He would lord it over the rest of the company, but eventually Eric Bischoff got his, right?
You know why that worked, though, Mike? I'll tell you why that worked. Because Bischoff had wrestlers on his side. In other words, Bischoff wasn't saying, I'll tell everybody what to do. Nash, you do this, and if you don't do this, you're fired. And Nash says, okay, all right, I'll do it. I'll protect you. No, that's not what it was at all. They were all running buddies. They were all one big group together. That worked. Now, you notice when Triple H was doing it, it was the opposite. He was barking orders at everybody, and everybody had to comply. Nobody was his real buddy. When Seth Rollins was, it worked for a little while, remember? But then Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville, what's this? 1 minute they're yelling at Sami Zayn, well, he's a heel. The next minute they're yelling at Rey Mysterio, he's a face. So they just get to bully all the wrestlers, and none of these big bad wrestlers are going to say, let me tell you something. I'm not putting up with this crap from you. Oh, only Brock Lesnar. That's why it doesn't work. That's precisely why it doesn't work. See, Vince McMahon didn't pick on a lot of wrestlers. He targeted like one. Stone Cold, or sometimes it was The Rock, or whoever it happened to be, he was targeting one. One at a time, for the most part. Eric Bischoff, it worked because he had half the Federation on his side. He basically just said, I am with the heels, and I'm going to screw the faces. He didn't screw the heels, too. That's what they're doing in the WWE, Mike, is they're screwing with all of the wrestlers, and it's just making it look like all of these wrestlers are just cowardly and won't stand up to them.
Right, and we thought what was going to happen, particularly with the Naomi thing, was that eventually Roman Reigns would eventually stick up for Naomi and go over and read What's-Her-Name, the Riot Act, you know?
Yeah, that's what you think.
And that's what we thought, and particularly me, what I thought would happen was Naomi would eventually not call herself Naomi, but call herself, like, Trinity Uso, flat out change her name.
Something. Yeah, I mean, look, this is not working the way it is. It's just not. Adam Pearce is not a threatening enough whatever because no one ever gave him any real power. It's just one day he showed up and I'm not an authority figure, and then all of a sudden he is. See, we bought it with Vince McMahon because we understood Vince McMahon owns this company. We bought it with Triple H because we understood his connections with Stephanie. I'm not buying it with Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce. I'm just not buying it. It's not working. So Rey and Lashley have a pretty good match. You'll notice that what I said should have happened during Bianca Belair and Tamina did happen during Lashley and Rey Mysterio, which is them saying, Rey Mysterio has fought a lot of guys in his time, and he's beaten a lot of big guys, but no one as powerful and as athletic and as multi-talented as Bobby Lashley. And Rey Mysterio is not winning this match. And then even those guys who said that at some point in the match said, Rey's going to pull this off. Rey's going to pull this off. Lashley's getting tired. Rey's out outsmarting him. He's too quick. He's going to pull it off. At least they sold that Ray could hold his own and come damn close to beating a guy twice his size who's the champion, who's been the champion. So Ray walks out of this still looking pretty good, which is exactly what I said they should have done with Tamina and Bianca Belair. They sold Rey Mysterio in this. His loss doesn't mean that much because he damn sure came close to winning, to the point where the announcers were saying he's going to win this. He's going to pull this off because Bobby Lashley sold that Rey Mysterio is hard to get a hold of. He'd take a lot of punishment. And just when you think you got him, he reverses it into something. And you know, his agility is a problem for a guy like Bobby Lashley. He sold that. That's exactly what they needed to do in the Tamina and Bianca Belair match that they didn't. Now, adding Austin Theory could be a blessing or it could be a curse, and here's why. If Austin Theory, you have to be eliminated in these matches, and if Austin Theory is eliminated by anybody, that's his first pinfall that I know of, and I don't think it should come into Survivor Series. So all he can hope for is that Austin Theory survives, because you've built him up really well. You built him up as a very good heel, and I don't want to see him pinned yet. It's not his time to be pinned yet by anybody. I don't care if it's a Raw, it's a SmackDown guy he's never going to face. It doesn't matter. So I would much rather see Austin Theory out of this and maybe play a role in it somehow with the Mysterio family than I would see him get pinned and eliminated third guy out or something. Because if that's the case, you've done all this build up for nothing, Mike.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you look at Austin Theory, boy, I'm liking what they're doing with him. So I am liking that this whole gimmick, this whole, I'm going to take a selfie with you after you've lost or whatever, you know, and make fun right. of you. I mean, it's almost a miss type of thing, right?
Yeah, definitely is. But it's a much less likable Miz type thing. In other words, no matter what the Miz did, all of his nonsense, he remains sort of charismatic and likable. Austin Theory is not. Austin Theory is the guy you want to see get punched in the face. That's good. Because we have enough guys like the Miz who you say, well, they're a heel, but they're fun. I like them. I've had enough of that. You can have a couple of those guys in the Federation, and that's great. But you want a couple of heels that people don't think is fun, and they don't think is comical, and they don't enjoy their shtick. Austin Theory could be one of those guys. But Todd, they can't, you know, they can't have him first, second, third eliminated. They shouldn't have him eliminated at all, in my opinion, in the Survivor Series.
I think you're absolutely right, like you said. If that happens, it's done if he gets eliminated.
You know, they're going to say, oh, no, it's not done. But in a way it is, because then that magic of who's going to be the first guy to get him is over. It's over. Anyway, before we get to our ratings, I did want to discuss this. The ratings came in for SmackDown last week, and the ratings came in for Rampage, and Rampage was a disaster. And Rampage was a go-home show. Rampage was just slightly over 500,000. That is not good. There's no way to sugarcoat it. That is not good. And when you have SmackDown as a lead-in, you literally have SmackDown as a lead-in. Wrestling fans are at 10 o'clock are turning the television either off or to a different channel, not watching AEW. That's alarming. It would be a lot less egregious if it was on a different day and you say, well, people just, how much wrestling can you watch? But you're already pumped up. You're already amped up. You've already watched SmackDown, and you can flip it right over now and watch Rampage, and you're not? You know, that's really weird. I know football fans who are like, oh, the one game's over. I got to switch over to the other game. That game's still on, or that game's just starting. Same way with baseball fans. They do that all the time. Nobody's doing this with AEW. And it's time Tony Khan shut his mouth, because the more he talks, the less ratings he gets. Because he's isolating some of his fan base. Some of the fans are just saying, well, if that's the way you feel, and we're all stupid because we like WWE, then why in the hell would we bother watching your federation? You've just come off a great pay-per-view. Groundbreakingly good, that could really lead you into something. Shut up. Let these guys wrestle. Try to promote it the best way you can without mentioning the WWE every 2 seconds, and you'll be a hell of a lot better off. Because if you're going to look to pick a fight with a television show that's getting 2.3 million and you're getting 500,000, you got a long, long, long hill to climb. And I don't care if they don't reach that many people. If you take the percentage of how much that network reaches, you still should be drawing a million. You still should be drawing a million. If SmackDown can draw 2-something, then you should be at least drawing 1-something. And you're not coming close to that. So, I mean, 500,000 is impact ratings, Mike.
Yeah, that's impact ratings. And that's the thing. I mean, look, I know what they're trying to do with Cody, but here's the deal. Cody and Arn and Tully and people like that, and even Dustin need to get a hold of Tony Khan and say, look, Tony, yeah, you're the money man, but shut up and let us plug along, and we'll get it to where the ratings come up on Rampage. Just shut your mouth and let us do our job.
Yeah, I think that's what he's got to do. I mean, Cody Rhodes deleted his Twitter account because of some fan backlash. And you see, this is what you're going to have to deal with. You know, Cody Rhodes is like, we're all about the fans. We're going to listen to all the fans. Well, you're not listening to the fans. You're shutting them off and saying, I'm going to shut my Twitter off because I don't want to listen to the fans. I understand that it gets very negative, and there are some fans, believe me when I tell you, these new breed of wrestling fans, it can be hard. There's a new breed of wrestling fans. Let's put it this way. Top Dollar put out a rap song making fun of Jinder Mahal and Shanky that they did on Monday Night Raw. In it, he said something about a Maharaja is another word for a prince, which you aren't. Well, a Maharaja is really the word for a king, which was pointed out to him. But then people were saying, oh, you made a slander comment about their race because you said something about Curry. And he came back with what I thought was a really good answer and said, Jinder Mahal and Shanky were making fun of my heritage. And I was laughing about it because, you know, he didn't say they're friends of mine, but he was sort of indicating, laughing about it because we knew they cleared it with me. And I was just doing the same. We're just having fun with it. We're trying to have fun. And you nitpick and nitpick. Every single thing we do has to be put under a microscope to see if everyone in the room, including the most sensitive person in the room, is okay with it. And if it's not okayed by the most sensitive person, then it's got to go, and that's dumb. They okayed that. Who the hell are you to say he can't say it? Do you do that with a movie? Do you say, before I go to this movie, I want to see the script? And if the script has anything offensive in it, I want it removed before I sit down to watch the movie? No, you don't. I've said it before, and I will say it again. If you're the type of person who scrutinizes every single thing a professional wrestler does and says, to be politically correct and non-offensive, you need to watch something different. Wrestling's not for you. And they have no obligation to be for you. They have no obligation to make it okay for you. In other words, if there's 10 people who were offended by this and 100,000 people who thought it was funny, how come we have to play to the 10 people? How come we have to make it okay for the 10 people instead of the 10 people saying, well, the 100,000 are okay with it. I guess maybe this just isn't for me because I'm very sensitive about this kind of stuff. Then if you're sensitive about that kind of stuff, you're probably not a wrestling fan, really. You're probably just in it because you think it's a, you know, the cool thing right now. Because wrestling fans aren't that sensitive. And that's not very egregious. So I was surprised to hear that, Mike, and really shocked because this is what holds wrestling down.
Right, and look, we're all wrestling fans, and look, they did some pretty bad things in the Attitude Era, include the least of which was probably having what's her name bark like a dog, you know, and crawl out of Vince McMahon on her knees and stuff like that. Very sexist, very misogynistic things. I had no problem with it because I knew, you know, what was going on there. I knew it. I knew it was for the most part, it was an act. I knew that, and it didn't offend me. I mean, it probably should have offended me more than it did, but I knew it was an act, and I knew what it, I've been a wrestling fan. I'd been a wrestling fan for 20 years, whatever it was. I'd seen a lot of stuff by that point, you know?
Mike, isn't the whole point of professional wrestling, though? Isn't the whole point that the heels do something that does offend you, at least as that character? And then you say, I can't wait for that person to get what's coming to them because what they did was outrageous and offensive. That's the whole point of wrestling. If you say, well, they can't do anything that offends me, then why are you rooting against them? Why don't you like them? What is the point of someone trying to get revenge? So it's not offensive for somebody to jump somebody with a steel chair and beat them up or two-on-one beat them up. That's not offensive because it's just wrestling. But it is offensive if you culturally misappropriate. How about Zelina Vega using a fake UK accent? Huh? Is she doing it? Is that cultural misappropriation? She's not English. I don't see anybody on her Twitter account saying, how dare you? This is just stupid. Stop it already. The dangerous thing is, I'm not even so upset because some of the fans feel that way. I know wrestlers who feel that way. Well, what the hell are you doing in the business? When Vince McMahon did that, we all said, oh, that's terrible. That's highly offensive. That's awful. But he's going to get his, and you already knew it. So you just sit back and say, that's okay, because he's going to get his, and then I'll enjoy it more. That's the game. And you can't be sensitive about every culture. My God, I'm Irish. They had Hornswoggle running around as a leprechaun. And they had Sheamus eating raw potato. You don't think that's slightly denigrating to the Irish culture? Did anybody say anything? It's just like, whatever. It's wrestling. I'm not purposely trying to down somebody's culture. I heard a hilarious thing the other day. Oh, well, Shinsuke Nakamura is not being used well because the WWE is racist. WWE's racist. They have Bobby Lashley as the champion. They have Big E as the champion. They currently have Shinsuke Nakamura as the champion. They have a Mexican guy. I guess he's Mexican or Puerto Rican. And Damian Priest is the champion. Come on. How long are you going to hang your hat on that crap? It's just bull. Anyway, this was not a good go-home show. It was like, okay, we're going to start to promote Survivor Series. Yeah, never mind. Let's just try to have a decent show tonight and forget about it. Oh, we're going to try to promote this match. No, let somebody else come out and take the thunder away from that match. I don't know why you're doing that. The Survivor Series does not feel special this year. It just doesn't. And I remember looking forward to them so much. And this year it feels like, yeah, whatever. So as a go-home show, as a regular show, I'd give this probably a C. But as a go-home show, this has got to be a D plus. I mean, it just didn't do anything that makes me want to watch the Survivor Series more. So I'm going to go with D plus, Mike. What's yours?
I got to go with D plus as well. You know, and look, we talk about how good the last pay-per-view was for AEW, right?
Yes.
Even though the go home show was bad, I'm still looking forward to this week's Dynamite. I'm still looking forward to, even though the ratings may or may not be better, the Rampage. That's what you're supposed to be doing. The go home shows are supposed to make you look forward to the pay per views, and the pay per views are supposed to make you look forward to the next TV show, right? But
absolutely.
Recently, the WWE hasn't done that.
Not only have they not done it, Mike, they've actively done exactly the opposite. I mean, I could say, oh, I'm interested in seeing who's going to win between Big E and Roman, but I'm not really. Because they're not going to let Big E beat Roman. No one's beaten Roman to WrestleMania, so it's going to be a rip-off ending. As far as the Survivor Series matches, I don't care what team wins because there is no brand loyalty. Half of these guys were on the opposite brand, more than half. Two-thirds of them, if not three-quarters of them, were on the opposite brand a couple of weeks ago. It just doesn't make any sense. It was ill thought out, if it was thought out at all, and it just doesn't feel special in any way, shape, or form. We can say Charlotte Flair and Becky, we'll see what happens, could be good. We can say Big E and Roman Reigns should be good. Aside from that, I'm not seeing much here. And when you're going to compare it side by side with what AEW just put on with Full Gear, I think you're going to fall miserably short. Miserably short. And that's a shame. Because the Survivor Series was just a tradition and something we all as wrestling fans look forward to, Todd.
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said. I remember like back then with the Survivor Series was a traditional thing. I used to watch, I remember at the time when it was on Thanksgiving Eve or Thanksgiving night.
Right.
Now it's on the Sunday. And my grade is the same grade with you guys.
D plus all around. Look, folks, you got to do better than this, WWE. You just got to do better. And you'd think you'd give an eye to what the AEW did in their pay-per-view and say, guys, we got to light it up on this pay-per-view. Instead, you're kind of like, oh, we got to get by this. Let's just get by this pay-per-view so we can do better things on TV. This is your pay-per-view. This has got to be, and you're not treating it that way. And if you don't treat it that way, I don't see how the fans can. Anyway, we'll see you on Friday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade.